Blog Talk Radio.
We've got film, and we've got psychology. When we put the two together, we've got filmcology. Each week, we will look at the psychology of the characters in film, and it gives us something lovely to think about. So, let's get started. Filmcology is now.
Hello, everybody, and I apologize for being late. I'm about 3 to 5 minutes late. The system wouldn't let me in, so I was repeatedly calling in to get to the studio, but just wasn't happening. So I guess for some reason there's a late delay, but that's okay. I've got extra time on the show, so if we need some extra time, we'll go ahead and take it. And the reason that I'm really glad that we're doing this show, it's called Nuts. It's a vehicle that stars Barbra Streisand. And it's an incredible movie because it gives you an insight into specifically the New York mental health system. Okay, this movie, if you've never had the exciting occasion to be institutionalized either voluntarily or involuntarily or, well, there's a third one, and I'll get to that as well. But if you've never been institutionalized, you may not have any idea what kind of things that somebody could potentially go through with this kind of system. New York is it's a state that has very strong regulations when it comes to the mental health industry. And there's a lot of information about laws there, your civil rights, your personal rights. There's quite a lot. And hopefully, if you should ever end up involuntarily admitted to this particular system, you're able to find somebody that can help you that knows all the statutes. Because if you, heaven forbid, end up with somebody who doesn't really understand what's going on, it, well, quite honestly, you could have a really negative experience. And I'm not calling New York out more than anybody else. There's different systems in every state, and their regulations are inherent to those states. So it's one of those things, if you've ever been pulled into this kind of a system, you definitely need to try to get a hold of some of the policies, find out what they are on your own, along with your representative. In Washington State, in New York State, they call it the mental hygiene law as far as admissions. And they have the informal admission, there's a voluntary admission, and then there's an involuntary admission. In this movie, Nuts, we're talking about an involuntary admission, and one of the reasons that the main character, played by Barbra Streisand, is involuntarily admitted is because there was a little issue of first-degree manslaughter. So this film, Barbra Streisand, let me just tell you a little bit of background about it. Barbra Streisand was actually somewhat attached at the beginning to this movie. They also thought about casting Deborah Winger as one of the main client. At the time that Barbra Streisand was pulled in to do this movie, she actually was working on the film Yentl. They had a different person assigned for the director. Barbra Streisand chose not to do the directing, but she did assist with production, and she did a lot of research and work on this film, which according to Wikipedia, she didn't always get credit for, but you can always sort of tell when Barbara has her hands on a film, because everything is meticulously done. Even if the movie isn't super well made, when you look in the movie, you'll see just even the smallest details she takes extra care with. She's an amazing artist in every phase of the way. So, and the cast is incredible. I mean, we have Richard Dreyfuss, an Oscar winner, Maureen Stapleton, who has won, I think she's one of those Triple Cross winners. She has Tony Award, Golden Globe, Emmy, and all that. Eli Wallach, who just passed, very sad to hear that. He plays Dr. Herbert Morrison, the psychologist that's the head of this public mental health institution, who's just, well, he's like a lot of people that you may encounter, especially in the psychiatric field, that are more into their ego and status than they are what's going on with the patient. You have Carl Malden, who he's a stellar person. He's a stellar actor. There's just no getting around with it. And we all remember him in Streetcar Named Desire and The Streets of San Francisco. Just an incredible, incredible actor. And the main judge towards the end, James Whitmore, I absolutely adore him. I just think he's been wonderful since one of my old horror films called Them, where gigantic ants were tracing out in the desert, eating people up for sugar. Leslie Nielsen, who has passed on as well, and just we all know him from the Naked Gun series and Breakfast at Tiffany's, and or maybe it wasn't Breakfast at Tiffany's. Well, he's in a lot of older films that you see. Extremely gorgeous man. With just a great sense of humor. A lot of people in this movie that bring this cast together for an excellent production. So let's get into the film and start talking about some of these psychological issues to consider. And they're psychological issues that could affect your life or probably has touched your life in some manner by somebody around you. And that's why it's really important for us to be sensitive to the people that are around us, because we don't know what's behind their behaviors and some of the things that they say. So here we go. The movie opens up where you're seeing all these seemingly nefarious characters. I'm just going to use nefarious because I can't really think of another word at the moment. It's just basically people that most people would assume are associated with somebody on the streets, people who hang out on the streets or do things on the streets, whatever. And so we see this holding tank, and then in the midst of all these people being called out that it's time for their arraignment or hearing, there's Claudia, I believe it's the arraignment, there's Claudia Draper, who's played by Barbara Streisand. And so she walks out into this courtroom, and she doesn't, and it's one of those courtrooms with, you have arraignment. Generally, there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of attorneys waiting, or legal aid waiting to deal with a lot of different cases and people they don't even always know. Sometimes you have expensive attorneys in there because somebody is attached to someone's money. But anyway, she comes into this arraignment, and she reacts rather violently because she realizes that her courts are being her rights are being taken away. And one of the things that she's standing back while these attorneys have gone up to the bench to argue or discuss her with the judge. And the people who do these sort of, quote, night court type trials and arraignments, they're so used to things on a everything's at a such and such and such rate that they don't really, I mean, it's all sort of a blink of an eye for them. And meanwhile, the people that are, their lives are getting ready to be thrown in all kinds of different directions. It's a big deal to them, and they don't, they're outside the system, most of them. Most of them are not attorneys. Most of them aren't mental health professionals. Most of them don't have any clue what goes on with the dockets, maybe have never even seen a docket. So there's a whole lot of stuff going on in this room, and somebody's discussing you in your name, and you can't hear them because most of the time they have their back to you as they're discussing you. And she was having a problem with this, which anybody should. We hear somebody say this is a 2PC order. What that means is there's two psychiatrists certified that this person is something. You need to have two psychiatrists in New York State to certify that there's a reason why this person needs to be involuntarily admitted. So once that happens, the state assumes that there's good reason for you to be put away, unless somehow there's some intervening body, possibly, well, actually, I'm not quite sure what intervening body you would have. Hopefully your intervening body would be your attorney or some particular legal aid. In Washington State, it would be either a social worker or an attorney who has experience with mental health issues. So we see this whole condescending tone that's taking place around Claudia. And in the worst part is nobody's talking to her. Nobody's consulting her about what's going to happen to her. And they even say, these guys, as they're talking about her, they're more concerned about the fact that her father is some guy with status or money and well-connected in those parts. And they're basically deferring to his power and what he's got. They're deferring to a couple of psychiatrists that they haven't really met, they haven't talked to, and they don't know why the psychiatrist said what they said. They have an order, and that's basically it. And Claudia was smart enough to rile up against that. Unfortunately, it's probably less realistic that you're going to be able to get as far as she got in the beginning of this film, because most likely somebody's going to anesthetize you. Drug you if, you know, you cause too much of a ruckus in court. It's one of the places where just about everything you do can be used against you, and they really mean it when they say anything you say can be used against you in court. They're not kidding. So, anyways. As she becomes violent and she becomes brutal, she actually attacks the attorney that is one of the higher-priced attorneys in the area, which the legal aid counsel that are there for other cases are remarking about, that Claudia gets pulled off of her attorney that's hired by her powerful father, or stepfather, and she's taken out of the courtroom. Then she ends up meeting the legal aide who's assigned her case, even though he's overworked. It's interesting how in that particular scene, when Lewinsky, played by Richard Dreyfuss, is trying to exit the room quick because the other legal aide person has disappeared conveniently, the judge calls him out that he's going to be the next person. And he was trying to say he doesn't have the load for this. He's overloaded, and then the judge makes some quip, almost like a threat. Like, are you saying that you have too many cases to service this courtroom, something to that manner? And so he goes ahead and he goes to see this woman that he's already seen attack extremely high-priced attorney. He, on the way, ends up meeting the mother and the stepfather of Claudia Draper, and they want to know why he chose to convert the assumption that Claudia wasn't fit to stand trial, because the judge was pushing him to make a motion immediately, and he was trying to read the docket. He had just been given the docket. He doesn't know the person. He doesn't know what's going on. All he knows is the violence he's witnessed in court, and the judge is sort of pushing him, and so he says, yeah, no, I'm converting this. In other words, he's deciding that this is not acceptable. He's not accepting the findings, and he's going to legally argue against that. And so everybody's looking at him like he's a fool because the way everything looks. And then here this stepfather and this mother are like, why would you change that? Why would you fight that? And he said, well, I don't know what's going on, but there's got to be a reason for this girl to fight against her attorney in such a way. And they're like, we just want her to be safe. We don't want anything to happen to her. And then the mother says, tell Claudia that I love her. Okay, so then Lewinsky goes in to see this woman, but before he goes in to see her, he sees the Dr. Morrison, played by Eli Wallach, who is one of the psychiatrists that signed the order, the 2PC of certification. And he says that he doesn't have time to talk to him at that moment. And he's saying, well, why, what is it about her behavior that makes you go, oh, I can't deal with it. He doesn't want to deal with Richard Dreyfuss. Meanwhile, we see a man who speaks limited, it seemingly, amount of English. He has extremely thick accent. Not that it's going to make you less capable of being a mental health professional, but the way he's talking to Barbara Streisand and discussing things with her, well, or at least talking to her, you do get a strong sense that maybe he's not equipped for the capacity that he's in, but I'm sure that it had something to do with finances, this, that, who knows. When I worked in vet assisting, I was at a particular veterinarian's office, and it was owned by this really old veterinarian. Oh, he looked, if you know me, the whole age thing isn't my thing, but this guy looked almost like the character in this movie, Eli Wallach, little man that just seemed burnt out or, had other issues on his mind, didn't seem too concerned about the animals, but he was this sort of figurehead. So people came into his business as a veterinarian. There was the main office. People came in with their animals. They would hand their animals over to one of the veterinarian assistants, and then they would disappear behind the door. And there were all these things in the front office that made people think it was just this cute, lovable little veterinarian's office. And I know you're thinking, why are you going on about this? But I'm getting ready to explain. Give me a chance to make my case. And he even had in the front office a little pink thing for cats and a little blue thing for dogs that made owners think, oh, it's just a sweet little place. And you always saw the old guy out front, and he'd always talk to the customers and explain, like, some gobbledygook to make them think that he was the best veterinarian in the world. But once you went behind the door, which none of the customers did, the only person working on animals was this guy from Brazil. And he didn't speak English real well either. And what I could tell you about the way he handled animals made me sick. So I was doing my internship there, and I finally reported them to where I went to school because he actually had cats with feline leukemia in one cage right next to somebody else's healthy pet. And it was just crazy back there. But none of the owners who thought this was the greatest little place, because the figurehead was like Eli Wallach, very well-respected looking veterinarian who'd hired somebody who supposedly was a veterinarian from another country. But, yeah. So, this is what you're sort of getting the impression with Dr. Aranius, I think, that they called him. And Claudia states many times throughout the film that he barely spoke English. And at one point throughout the trial, she even said, and his Spanish wasn't that good either. So imagine that this is the person who is certifying that you need to be locked away. And just hope you're understanding the psychological ramifications of this. You know, who's qualifying the people that are qualifying you to be locked up? And generally, people aren't getting recertified every year, you know, as far as their mental capacity. So, yeah, my thoughts are, you know, whatever's going on in your life, you're having any emotional issues or anything, you know, make sure that you're trying to deal with it before somebody else does it without your consent. So going along with the movie as we move forward, Claudia is, oh, hold on just a second. Claudia is trying to, she encounters Lewinsky, and she's hostile to him as well. And he's trying to get her to understand, if you aren't going to work with me, I'll sign the admission order, and we'll be done with this. And she's angry because, she, first of all, she doesn't get to pick anything. Nobody's allowing her to pick. And she became more angry when he explained that her mother said to, when he told her that her mother said that she loved her. And then she gets riled up, like, are they paying you? Whatever. She just, it's such a amount of anger that, no, in the beginning of the movie, you don't know what's going on. Why would she be so rebellious and hateful to her parents, who are just seemingly like this sweet little couple that just, all we want is to help you, Claudia. We just love you. So we have Lewinsky the next day. He goes to her apartment, and then we see a little bit more about Claudia. We see the scene where the murder scene, the attorney goes through it, and he looks at another room, which is almost like an inner sanctum in Claudia's house that has many nice things, and you can see artwork that Claudia's done. And he goes through her things and finds her some clothes because, as most attorneys know, it's best for you to appear in court as if you actually have it together and are with it, instead of going into court in patient's robes, which, you know, is just booming that you are incapable of taking care of yourself. When he presents this to Claudia, that some clothes he wants her to wear, her own clothes, she has a fit and she feels violated, and she says, what right do you have? And then you see flashes of her dealing with the man that she murdered in self-defense, dealing with her father, taking, these are people who are taking liberties with her, without her consent. And that becomes the big common theme of contention for Claudia, is that she doesn't get a say in what's happening to her. So he apologized to her so we can sort of get on with the story. And he gets her, it's a pretty simple outfit, it's dark. And at one point, Claudia leans into Lewinsky and says, you know what I usually wear this outfit for? And he said, no. And she said, for the ones that want me to call them mama, you know, want to call me, want me to sit on their lap or something like that. Just the ones that sort of have Oedipal content, Oedipal issues, you know, mommy, son, whatever, Oedipal. Claudia is extremely sarcastic. She's brutally honest. It works against her in this entire arena. And basically, it tends to work against most patients in real life. When we're disgusted and you're used to sarcasm, somebody says, did you kill your mother? This was in a film, My Cousin Vinny. When you shot the clerks, and in My Cousin Vinny, the New Yorker says, I shot the clerk? And he says that a couple of times, and the good old Southern boys write it down as he confessed to shooting the clerk. And while this may be looked at as sort of glib and sort of a funny little detail, court is never the place to be sarcastic, ever. Ever. Even though we have a little comedy show, Night Court, yeah, the judge may try to be funny or whatever, but in real life, if a judge does stuff like that and somebody calls them on it, yeah, that could be more legal rambling trouble. Okay, moving back to the movie. As I was saying, anything a person says can be utilized to work against them. For or against an inpatient in a mental health system. So we go through the first scenes, and then the next time we see Lewinsky, he visits Claudia in the hospital. She's sitting at a table with a woman, and she explains, like, this doctor, she, you know, says that there's a really great defense, and she feels that there's nothing wrong with me and all this kind of stuff. And so Lewinsky sits down, and he's like, wow, you know, this is great. And he says, would you be willing to testify on Monday's hearing? And the woman gets up, and she goes, Monday, I'll have to have my secretary check that out. She says, just check my schedule. And the woman stands up, who had a sweater on, a sweater you would normally see, or you might see a psychologist or psychiatrist wearing. She had the glasses that were hanging around her neck, and she had a clipboard and a pen. These are all things that we tend to think about a psychiatrist in a mental health hospital would have. And as she's walking away, Lewinsky walks her walk away, and you see that there's a hospital gown underneath the sweater that's split open in the back. And Lewinsky says to Draper, he says, she seems so normal. And Claudia informs him, yeah, she killed her husband. And that's a big, big thing when we're talking about mental health issues. People seem normal. What does normal mean? Normal, it's this catch-all phrase that people sort of translates to the average person or most people. It's a term we all use. It's used a lot. We probably need to rescind using it as much as we do, because it's just too ambiguous to mean anything worthy. And yet, it's often used to harm people and put people away. It's also used to ostracize people with negative stigmas and labels. So, normal. Not my favorite word. Certainly not something I would like as a label for myself. So, if you pay attention to the characters in this film psychologically, and we're thinking about the word normal, you could either apply that to all of them, or if you think about it, you could say all of them are not normal. It really is such an ambiguous, useless term. The doctor who goes in to testify, Dr. Morrison, Eli Wallach, at one point when we're back in the courtroom and they're interviewing him or asking him, he's on the stand talking about Claudia Draper's ability to stand trial. He's asked if he thinks that she should actually be hospitalized before she can stand trial successfully. And he says, yes, he feels that she needs to be treated first. And he makes this great point about mental health. And he says, mental illness is the same as appendicitis or pneumonia. And he even goes on to say, if somebody has appendicitis, you're not going to make them come stand trial. If somebody has pneumonia, you're going to wait until they're better. And he says, we feel that she should be, you know, treated until she feels successfully, so we can get her successfully well again, so that she can stand trial for murder. Now, I keep saying this, I'll say it over and over and over again, and I hope that everybody gets it. Mental illness is not a person. It's something that they're experiencing. People don't choose to be mentally ill. Most people don't. I'm sure there's a lot of people who do choose to cut their foot off, or maybe they choose to have a heart attack. Maybe people around us choose to have aneurysms or to be born blind. I don't know. I'm not God. But the reality is, any type of illness, a state of dis-ease, whether it's mental or physical, that's something that happens. It's not who we are. And we need to remember that. When we label people, or we make fun of them, or ostracize them, or we continue to feed the stigma that are constantly associated with mental illness. When we're in the courtroom and we see the mom talking on the stand, now, it's one of the big things we start to see in this film, besides the fact of mental competency and people labeling. These are all big mental health issues. We see the mom talking on the stand, and we hear these classic symptoms of child abuse. She talks about how she has remarried after her husband left her. They ask her how Claudia accepted the stepfather, and it is asserted by the mom that, oh, she loved, it was love at first sight for both of us, is what she says. And then they ask about her behaviors, you know, as things go along, and she says, well, she asserts that when she was in sixth grade that Claudia changed. And she said that, but before that, she used to love me so much. She just loved me, and she used to say all the time, I love you, Mommy, from the moon and back, or something to that effect. And she said she couldn't get enough of me, but after sixth grade, her grades changed, and she just closed up, and she would smoke and drink and all these kind of things that she started to do as she, after, well, not, she wasn't drinking in sixth grade, but her whole demeanor changed. If you have a child and you're listening to this show, I'm not trying to scare you, but the realities are this. If you have a child and your child all of a sudden, who usually precociously gregarious or happy or just they are normally warm and adventurous, if all of a sudden your child has a stark change in their behavior, then you need to really find out what's going on. A lot of parents make the mistake of asking their children what's going on. Well, children often will shut down because they're ashamed or they're scared and they don't know how to deal with it. And the more you ask them and probe them about it, the more likely they're trying to make everything go away. The other thing is when people sexually molest children, classic things they do are they either give you things or they threaten you. Or worse, they threaten your parents. If you don't do this for me, I'm going to do this to your parents. If you tell your parents, then I'm going to kill them. You know, just, you know, I'm giving you this because I, you know, all kinds of horrific things that they do to trap children who are so young, they don't quite understand, a lot of children don't understand that their rights are being taken away or that this person is really bad and that they really need to scream help. And part of the problem is the person that's molesting you is likely somebody very close to you, either a step-grandfather or a step-father or mother or an older brother or possibly a younger brother or sister. Maybe it's one of your parents' best friends. It could be your own grandmother or aunt or uncle. It could be anybody that your parents seem to trust and you're basically told to respect as an authority figure, possibly your priest, or your caretaker, babysitter, anything like that. So we're seeing already the beginnings of this child, Claudia, of being sexually abused, and we start to see glimpses from Claudia's mind of how it's starting to take place, where she's in the bathroom and her father, stepfather comes in, or she's running water and she turns and somebody else is entering her room. At one point, Claudia, the mother is talking about how Claudia, she didn't understand, she didn't know why Claudia was having these changes in her life. And then we see a scene where Claudia is a little girl in her bedroom crying. They don't show the dad exactly, but she's crying and the mother is walking by the room where the door is slightly open and she's got a drink. So she just closes the little girl's room where the little girl's crying. I assumed that the father wasn't in there. He'd already exited whatever it is he had done to the little girl, the traumatized Claudia, the little girl. But the mom she didn't know and she didn't want to know, which actually came out later in the trial. And so then she says, we start to see why Claudia is so rebellious towards her mother, and she's resentful. And I can speak from my own personal experiences from a boyfriend my mom had that she didn't know he was creepy. He tried to come at me wrong every chance he could. Whenever he found me alone, he even went so far as to come to our house in the afternoon when our mom never got home before 6 o'clock at night. And he knew that. And he had come to the house, it was like 3 o'clock. I'd never seen him there before by himself. I happened to be alone. And he came into the house, and supposedly on the guise that he had to leave something for my mom. So I was actually on the phone with one of my girlfriends, and I was in high school. And he said he needed to use the phone is what he tried to say. So I hung the phone up because it's my mother's boyfriend. He's in a pseudo position of authority. And I didn't want to get in trouble with my mom, who is quite strict. So the one time Cheryl wasn't there, my brother Mark wasn't there, nobody was there but me. And he didn't use the phone that he claimed he had to use. And he said, oh, I've got something for you. And this is the truth. He gave me a $20 bill, and it's like, what's that for? And he said, well, it's just for you. I've been wanting to give you something. It's like, why? And he said, just, you know, because I just wanted to give you something. So I just laid the $20 down on the table, and he said, well, aren't you going to give me a hug? And it's like, God. I go to give him a hug, and he's holding on to me and won't let go. And he says, no, aren't you going to give me a kiss? And it's like, for what? And he goes, well, you know, like you would kiss your brothers or something. And I said, and I immediately, it was just like the hairs in the back of my neck were standing up big time. And I just went into just play stupid, play a really stupid infantile kid. Yeah, I was in high school, but I'm not as stupid as sometimes I sound. And I just said, ew, gross, disgusting. I said, that's gross. I never, ever, ew. I never, ever kissed my brothers. Gross. And I just like, that's just nasty. And it scared him because he thought, oh, my God, she's going to say something to somebody. I could just see it written all over his face. And he let go of me almost like he dropped a hot potato. And he goes, well, yeah, real nervously. He goes, well, tell your mom that I'll go ahead and call her myself. And he left with a quickness. And the $20 was sitting on the table, and then I thought, that jerk. I put the $20 in my pocket. I didn't think about it. That was that. And I just thought he was a jerk. And I called my girlfriend back, and I was telling her about it. She goes, God, that's disgusting. Can't tell your mom. It's like, why? She's dating the creep. I mean, these are the things. Well, kids, they don't know. If you're a parent and your child is acting a little bit strange after you start dating somebody, you might want to get outside your gonad issues and start protecting your child. Because if you don't, and you find a couple years later that your child seems to hate you, unconditionally hating you, or mistreating you, or is rebellious, or wants to embarrass you all the time, there's probably something going on with somebody you've allowed into your household. So later that night, when my mom got home, isn't it amazing? He came home with my mom. And the first thing out of her mouth is, where's the money that Sam gave you for you and the rest of the kids? And it's like, excuse me? And she goes, didn't he give you a 20 for all of you kids? And I said, yeah. And I handed her the 20. And it's like, that wasn't just for you. And I said, yeah, I don't care. I don't need it. But just showing just how insidious these predators are. So let's jump back in with Claudia in the movie Nuts. Her stepfather then stands up to testify. And the stepfather I don't know if abusers like this just can't think clearly or what, but they say all the stuff that confirms that there is some junk going on. He actually said to the attorney that he gave her gifts. He used cash and things to make sure that she could, you know, reward his stepdaughter, as he said, for doing what he wanted her to do. And the attorney, Lewinsky, says, yeah, he said, that sounds like a reward system that you're doing with the cash and sort of buying things off. And he goes, well, yeah, I think that it's good. It's like, you know, if she does her homework on time, I give her some money. And, you know, if she cleans up or helps her mother or some junk like that. And then at one point, he said, I was her stepfather. I loved her. I helped her with her homework, and I helped bathe her and this and that. And at one point, Claudia starts getting upset. And Lewinsky looks at her and is trying to figure out what's going on, what happened, you know, in what this guy just said. And he turns back to the guy at one point and says, I'm sorry, did you say that you helped bathe your stepdaughter? And he goes, yeah, ever since she was 5 years old. He's very proud of this fact. And it's like, how long did that bathing go on? And he said, I don't think I like what you're insinuating. And he said, how long did that bathing go on? That's when the big breakdown takes place. And he's yelling at Lewinsky. And Lewinsky at one point said, my daughter kicked me out of the bathroom when she was 4 years old. And then Claudia reveals tearfully that she was 16 when the bathing stopped. And then the mom, you know, obviously not with a drink in her hand, is forced to deal with this in front of God and man and everyone in court. And she's now panicky. And she's yelling, I didn't know. And the stepfather, who's being held back, he's yelling, it's like, don't say it. He's saying to Claudia, it's like, I'll give you anything, baby. I'll give you anything. Don't say this. And he's telling his wife, don't believe her. It's not true. None of it's true. And he's going, baby, I'll do anything for it. Just tell me what you want, and I'll get it for you. And then Claudia sort of crumbles to the ground, and the bailiff, Harry, is holding her, and she's like, please, she's pleading, please, don't let him touch me, don't let him hurt me. Almost like she's getting down in that fetal position from all the years of what she went through. And that night, Lewinsky is sitting next to her on her bed in the hospital, and she's clearly been drugged. And she asks him, sort of sloshed, did we lose? And he said, not yet. And then she starts to cry again, and she says, I didn't tell him to stop. I just even hate that any kid would take that on. I just hate it. And her attorney says, you were a little girl, and it's not your responsibility to do that. And she says, shouldn't you go home? Your place should be with your wife. And he said, no, it's to be right here, right now. And he held her hand as she fell asleep. And then he went out and found that Dr. Morrison, who was eating lunch. It's just kind of interesting how oblivious people are that do you harm. And they just sort of get back to their world like it's nothing. And he said, why did you drug my client? It's like, well, after what you did to her in court, how could I not drug her? And it's like, she better be lucid basically tomorrow for her testimony. It's like, oh, she will be. And then Lewinsky throws all his meal, knocks his meal plate all over the place, and he said, you better, or she better be, or I will sue you. And, of course, then he doesn't take too kindly to those threats. The next day, Claudia goes into court, and she's in her, she's not in her regular clothes, she's just in the hospital gown, probably because she's a little bit worn down, and she's been, you know, the drugs take a while to come out of your system. So when she goes on to the stand, before she even goes on to the stand to speak, the judge, and this is one thing I want people to notice in this film, how they are constantly trying to take away her credibility. As she stands up to go to the witness stand to testify, the judge says, you can testify right there at the table if you're more comfortable. And she said, no, I like everyone else, I'm going to go up to the witness stand. And he said, well, I'm just letting you know, it's okay, I will allow it. And she said, everybody else went up to the witness stand, I want to go to the witness stand. I mean, just psychologically, from that little she has to fight tooth every step of the way, tooth and nail, just to even be treated like she's competent. And she goes up to the witness stand, and you know that there's still a little bit of a fog with her. Is she obviously a very intelligent woman? She has a good memory, but she can't remember everything she's read in the New York State legal book that refers to issues with mental hygiene law. But she does speak a few things. The attorney tries to indicate that she was drugged, but of course the prosecuting attorney wants to squash that. As things go forward, and he's asking her, do you understand what's going on? And it's like, yeah, you guys can put me away for a very long time. After a year, basically 60 days before the end of the year, you could bring me in and decide that I'm still not competent and throw me back in for another year. And then you can keep doing that for up to two-thirds of my sentence, which the attorney asked, well, do you know how many years that would mean? She goes, yeah, like 16, 17 years. And so then the prosecuting attorney wants to point out, it's like, well, she's exaggerating, Your Honor. And she says, no, you can put me away for a very long time. And he goes, that's simply not true. And she says, look at the book, it's right there. And she even cites the name of the judge, the Honorable Judge blah, 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 actually wrote this. It's right there in the book, look at it. And so the prosecuting attorney continues to have an issue with it until the judge says, well, actually, she has that statute completely right, and you should know this. So she gets a little leg up there, and as she continues on, she talks about who she is and how she makes money. After the prosecuting attorney wants to know, he's trying to cat and mouse her into saying she's a prostitute, which she doesn't do. And she's smart enough to ask the judge if some of this information could be held against her and if she gets gifts for favors. And the judge says no. So then he keeps pushing the prosecuting attorney about, well, how do you eat? You know, you turn in these gifts, da-da-da. And finally she said, let's just cut through the bullshit. She goes, this is how much I get when I give head, when I do a straight lay, if you want to wear my panties, if you want to take my panties home. And this is how it works. I look you over. If I want to be with you or I'm interested in you, then we, you know, have a situation. She's very explicit. And as she's doing that, of course, Mommy is getting more upset sitting out there in the stand. And this attorney, who's rather aggressive, the prosecuting attorney, he's getting extremely hot under the collar. which I thought was brilliant. The way she made him just sort of prickly, become so prickly. And then after that, and he's uncomfortable and has to sort of readjust his clothing, she asks the judge, now, can any of that be held against me? And he said, no. And she's like, good. Yeah, I ask you, is this the kind of person who is not competent to stand trial? So she talks about what happened with her mother, I mean her stepfather. She says, because this prosecuting attorney is saying, you could have asked your parents for money, but you'd rather sell your body for gifts, exchange your body for gifts, than to ask your parents for money. And Claudia says, it hurts less to sell yourself to strangers. And then she says, the truth is, I didn't have a nifty childhood. Poor me. Life sucks. When he asked her, do you trust your mother? And she said, no. Do you trust the judge? Do you trust your attorney? And she's like, yeah, he's all right. And he keeps pushing. It's like, well, in this whole courtroom, you don't even trust the judge. Who do you trust in this courtroom? And she points to Harry, the bailiff. And it's like, the bailiff? And she said, yeah, because he doesn't give a shit. You all have something that you want to do to me. And she said, anyone that can hurt me, I don't trust. She doesn't trust anybody that can hurt her. And this is huge stuff, and it's all coming from child abuse, psychological torture. I mean, it's bad enough that somebody can torture you with their power over you, but then to, you know, add the added spice of physical torture, great. She says when the attorney, when she sits down and her attorney rests or whatever, the prosecuting attorney calls the head doctor back, Dr. Morrison, played by Eli Wallach. And it's like, after everything you've heard, do you still think she should be locked up? And he says, yes. I think she needs to be locked up. And then Claudia gets upset again, and she's like, wait a minute. Like, it just doesn't matter. You're not listening to me. And so there becomes this whole issue, and she's supposed to sit down, and finally she says, you're listening to everyone else. Why don't you listen to me? And it's like, well, you've already been on the stand. She said, put me back on the stand. And she makes these great points. Even though I'm in the mental health field, I'm training for it, I still don't think somebody has a right to mistreat someone based on the profession they're in, including mine. And Claudia says, what if he's just an asshole with the power to lock me up? And then Dr. Morrison objects to that and immediately claims, she needs to be in the hospital. And the mother goes into her thing about she just didn't know as they're waiting for the judge to make his decision. And she says to Claudia, I just didn't know. And Claudia said, yes, you did, Mama. You just didn't want to know. And that prosecuting attorney says at one point, I don't understand. Do you love your mother? And she said, yeah, I love her. So what? And Claudia even asserts to the judge at one point, while you're all playing with my goddamn rules, the meter's running out on my life. She goes, I'm not just a picture in your heads or a daughter or a wife or a patient, et cetera. She said, so don't judge me by my blowjobs. She says, they're sane. You know, if I do something, I'm responsible. If you want me to play sick, I won't be responsible. And she said, I won't be another picture in your head. Claudia the nut. She says, he can sign a piece of paper and say I'm nuts, but it doesn't make me nuts. and I won't be nuts for you, she says to everybody. And she says to her mom, I won't be nuts for you either, Mama. And the last person she says it to is the court stenographer, and she says, I won't be nuts for you either. And, okay? And he nods like, okay. At some point, still waiting for the judge, she comforts her mom. And she says, you know, they have that conversation about, I love you from the moon and up. And her mom just keeps crying. And she says, it's okay, Mama. Just sit down. It's going to be okay. She's comforting someone who essentially was a big part of why she's there. And then the judge comes out and basically asserts that he feels that she's competent to stand trial, even though he thought it was a mistake for her not to have another mental health professional to sign off on her competency. But he lets her go, the prosecuting attorney, and that doctor are, you know, uproarious about it. But the judge said, and they actually wanted bail because she did this heinous crime. She was defending herself. But the judge says, I have made my ruling. And Claudia, you know, hugs her attorney, and she walks out. He goes, where are you going? She goes out. And just imagine how happy it must be that you don't even care what you look like. You're just getting the hell out of that horrible nightmare. And she walks out amongst all these people on the streets of New York, and there's a guy singing and carrying on and yelling, talking to himself, like just like what people technically would think is crazy. And she is just looking at him and sort of puts her hands up like, of course, I'm the one that's going to be locked up. And she continues to walk out into the crowd. And we find out at the very end of the film that she got Aaron Lewinsky to represent her, and she was acquitted of manslaughter charges. And we find out that that horrible doctor, he resigned, but he then took up position as the head of the Health and Welfare Department. How convenient, more people to lord over. So that was the movie Nuts. Main things to remember, the stigma issue, people that you think are nuts or you want to call crazy or insane, you may not really know what you're talking about. And you might want to hold your judgment, because there's a whole lot of things going on in the darkness of who we are that don't always come to light with just the first meeting or the second, third, or maybe even your 500 billionth time with someone. There's a lot of people that don't tell you things. Maybe it's not because they don't like you or don't trust you in the way you think, but maybe it's just too hard for them to tell. And it's hard to tell. It becomes less hard the more you tell it. I get more emotional about other people being traumatized or mistreated or ostracized, embarrassed. That hurts me more at this point in my life than the people that tried to molest me and did molest me. Yeah, it happened to me. It wasn't nifty then either. But I survived it, and I talked a lot about it or wrote about it. Writing can help you through almost anything, people. Trust me. But I dealt with it. And you can tell when things are less, you know, affecting in your life because you react less and less to it. It no longer serves as a big dagger in your eyes or your back or your heart. because you've put it somewhere or you've dealt with it mostly to the point where you understand the things that happen to you, you know, it's not all your fault. And I think when we feel responsible, it makes it more difficult for us. So, anyway, child abuse, watch for it if you have children. If your child has changed any of their normal behaviors, be very careful and suspect. You might have to do some investigation. You know, but don't just come at your kid as like, is anybody touching you? Is anybody doing anything to you? Point blank, you know, questions like that often scare children. And then sometimes they answer in ways just because they think that's what you want. And it may not necessarily be the truth. So it's one thing to think about. You know, find counseling, folks. We all need it. I don't care who you are. Psychiatrist, psychologist, whoever, doctor, nurse, surgeon, broom pusher, McDonald's worker, we all need somebody to talk to outside of our regular inner circle, somebody that you can trust not to tell people things you don't really want them to know. Okay, and if you have some inkling that you might have some kind of issues, or somebody you know might have some kind of issues of mental health, then, you know, try to support them by, you know, letting them know. Like if, you know, you want to talk about something, you know, I'm here or I can help you. If you think there's somebody else, I'll help you try to find somebody or get some information for you. Something. You know, maybe you just need to go talk to someone yourself. Like, I don't know what's going on with my child and it's worrying me. You know, going to see somebody might help you work out the next best decision. Counseling's out there, folks, and it's for everybody. And just because you go see a counselor does not make you crazy. And even if you're severely, if you have a severe disorder going on, it doesn't make you crazy either. It just means you have an illness. And getting it better is more than putting a Band-Aid on. It's healing things up. Time to heal, folks. Okay, that's basically the show. I don't know if anybody else wanted to make any comments. I know that there's a couple of people on the air. I don't know if you guys are just listening. I'll bring you on mute. If you want to say anything, you can. If not, then I'm probably going to go on to tell you what episodes are coming up. Okay.
Great show, Brenda. A great, great show, Brenda. Yeah. Thank you for doing this.
You're welcome. Yeah, well, I didn't make the movie.
It was a great
and it
movie.
I didn't see all of it. I watched the extended trailer and the trailer, and I really wish I could have seen this movie. It's awesome.
It was
really
very good.
Good movie.
Yeah, I thought it was a great movie. Yeah, I mean it's not Citizen Kane, but then you know, it's more to my liking, psychologist type stuff. You know what I'm going into. Okay,
exactly.
But thank you for that. So is that it? I mean, I don't want to cut anybody off, but I know that we went later. I really couldn't get in; it wouldn't let me, and it kept saying there was an error. Sorry. So
I've had that.
I've already sent an email to Blog Talk, and they've gotten back to me, and they're going to let me know how they're going to fix the problem. So,
oh,
good.
You weren't able to get in either, huh? Yeah.
Well,
God,
Lydia had it happen. Yeah, so it will be fixed.
Good.
Okay. Well, then let's go ahead and
Wait a minute. I did want to talk about the movie a little bit too. I felt like you hit most of the points I wanted to talk about. I also liked it from the standpoint. You know, it was about mental health, but it also I really enjoyed it from a legal standpoint. Luckily, she got someone who cared because there are people who are overworked, especially as public defenders, and they, you know, when the prosecutor was saying, you know, well, I'm going to try this against you, you know, you should not do this or whatever, then you could tell that that Richard Dreyfuss' character, Levinsky, he believed in the system, and he wanted to make sure she got a fair shake. And I'd like to think it happens all the time, but I know that it doesn't even when you're paying some lawyers. So and when I read it, had no idea that it was true. It just blew me away. I also immediately, there were signs for me that she was molested before it even got even clear. There was just a few signs, you know, like, well, I gave her everything and, you know, and just certain things. And I'm like, uh-oh, you know, I knew that was coming. And I, like you, had molestation in my life. And, you know, you do have to see the warning signs for your kids. I've also been, I was a counselor for a little while for a kids teen group at a church, and I had to deal with it, and it blew my mind that the mother, you know, she came right away when we called her because she told a young girl, and the young girl came to me and said, you know, Mary, whatever her name was, needs to talk to you. And I was like, oh, is she going to be pregnant? You know, that's the first thing that came into my mind. And then, bam, she told me what was going on with her mother's boyfriend. And I told the minister, and then we called the mom. And the mom, you know, went through all these emotions. First, like, oh, my daughter. And then it was like she got in denial real quick. Oh, no, you're lying. You're not telling the truth. And it just, it was really, really sad. So I don't think many people lie about something like that. So I really great show. I really appreciate it, and I love the movie. I'm really glad I saw it. Thanks, Brenda.
Yeah, I have to say for my mom, my mom didn't know that this guy was a creep. I didn't discuss it with her. I think when she finally found out, I was probably in my 20s, and he was long gone. But I didn't have the best relationship with my mom. So, and I just, quite honestly, I didn't think she'd care, because a child could think that way because, you know, you're mm-hmm. with them. We're thinking it's a creep. And we think that a parent should know, even though they're not aware of what's going on. But, yeah, I didn't have a big change in behavior because he never got the ability to do what he was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, when a man, it doesn't matter what gender, is giving a child money
mm-hmm.
to do things. Like, I'll give you $5 if you go get my tennis rackets out of the car. Why would you do that? Just ask him mm-hmm. to get the tennis rackets. I'm not trying to cut the money for the kid. The point is, they're setting up this piecemeal system or that's really inappropriate for a child. If you know, your grandparents giving you money for your birthday or you went to visit them and it's like, you know, take this $5, they palm it in your hand and get yourself something nice as you're leaving your grandparents' house. That's one thing. It's another thing if grandma or grandpa, you know, sequesters you into a back room and it's like, I'll give you this $20 if you help me out with something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a big... Yeah, so...
There's a big level of creepiness.
To this day, I don't like gifts. I don't like them.
I feel the same way. I mean, I know that I don't have anyone in my life that's creepy, but it's like, okay, what do you want? But we've talked about that. Yes, and the one person that I mentioned, he was giving her money, and at first innocently, and then asking her to leave the shower curtain open a little. That type of freaky stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And she knew it was wrong. She didn't feel she could go to her mom. She didn't, because she knew her mom really, really loved him, and she was frightened. And, you know, we also pick up our parents' insecurities and how, you know, if they've been alone for a while and they're raising kids by themselves and, you know, and it's hard, and we get that. I think especially maybe, I think we get it as kids that this is hard for them, and we certainly don't want to make their lives harder, you know. And
right.
It blew my mind that she ended up being a prostitute, a high paid prostitute. And it wasn't, to me, it was like, whoa, that puzzle fits really well. And when she told the guy, when he was like, come on, get in the bath, and she goes, I don't let anyone bathe me.
Yeah.
She goes, yeah. So, I mean, it was like, whoa, yeah, that, and then it was no surprise that her stepdad was doing that.
I remember telling one of my molesters, you know, what do you want me to become, pregnant or a prostitute? And they were looking at me and immediately like snapped into reality. And it's like, how are you going to feel if I do become a prostitute because of what you're trying to do to me?
Yeah, see,
thank
you were
God
not
they
a real
call it.
Vulnerable. Right, you are not a real vulnerable person. So, and I think that's probably where the guy, he went and got your mother and then was like, well, I gave her $20 for all the kids, you know.
Yeah.
He's like covering his tracks, but
exactly.
I doubt he would want to try that again because you're savvy. You're onto them. You know, they do pick vulnerable children that, you know, that will comply.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I had the most beautiful brown eyes he'd ever seen.
Well, yeah, and I've ever seen too, but I'm not giving you $20.
But you don't want to molest me, thank God. Well, folks, yeah. If you're out there listening on the archive or at the podcast or something, I just hope that you really listen to some of the things that were mentioned about the movie. Try to watch the movie, you know, try to look at, you know, some of the effects of this stuff. If you are somebody who has molested somebody or you're in the middle of doing that kind of thing, you know, you can get help. You really can. And I used to think the most horrific things about people who did that, but I understand that we're all human beings and we all have flaws, but there's help. Whether you've been molested or you're doing the molesting, and we're all going to get better as soon as everybody seeks help, you know, for doing things that are harmful to ourselves or others. So find a counselor, find the Yellow Pages, call the crisis clinic, crisis line in your area. Somebody can help you out, you know, or you could even go into a hospital and just, you know, I have a problem. It's a real simple statement. I have a problem. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for the show. Oh, I'm going to go ahead and give you the schedule real quickly. Tomorrow we have... What is today? Isn't today...
Traffic Jam. Thursday. Thursday.
Thursday. Friday traffic jams is tomorrow at 5 p.m. Lennis is going to be playing smooth jazz, 1 hour of music to get your weekend started.
Yeah, I was looking at the archive.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Saturday
go
is
ahead,
Time
Lydia.
To Love with Lydia. And Lydia,
yep,
your topic
love. I'm gonna be, is going to be loving yourself is mentally healthy.
Yeah, it is.
Good one. That's at 3 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, that and makes that 2 p.m. Pacific time, but 3 p.m.
Okay.
Mountain time.
Okay. Yeah, okay. It was my turn this week, Lydia.
Yeah, it's the same mistake I always make.
Yeah, we're
and
yeah,
then Sunday.
We're, yeah, we're most. Yeah. Go
Sunday
ahead.
Is
Go ahead, manager.
Sunday is psychic readings with Lennis, and that is at 3 p.m. Pacific time. She's still got that special on. Every ninth caller gets a free reading. That's a one-hour reading, $60 value. So call early, because the last 2 weeks we have not been able to get to everyone. And one question only, please, because I will be cutting in if you're going over.
And
that brings us to Monday.
Every ninth caller. That's every ninth caller, folks. So, you know, if you didn't make the first nine, you know, keep calling back so you can get the second one. Yeah. Hopefully they'll call out and say this is caller number one or something, so that you guys kind of know who's in what shape or something. But there's always people that get turned away at the end, folks. They'll call early. Is that, oh, what's next?
Monday.
Okay. LNB Passage to Empowerment. How does social networking affect your empowerment in your life? You having problems with, you know, you're in a relationship, not in a relationship, people put you in relationships, you know, do the things that Facebook and Twitter say make you sad, happy, or angry? You know, is it controlling your life? Do you have a life outside of these social networks? Yeah, we'll be talking about all of that on Monday, right, ladies?
You bet.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that is at 7 p.m. Pacific time.
Yeah.
And that brings us to Tuesday, BYO Brilliance. And Brenda, your topic?
This Tuesday is the brilliance of empowering your life with color. There's a lot of psychological effects from color, what you wear, what you're surrounded by. And we're going to take a look at that. And there might have been a little test on there. Check the link, see if there's a test on there you could take to find out what your colors are, your best colors. Or, well, just look online, you'll find one. So that's at 6 p.m. on Tuesday. Brings us to Wednesday.
And then, yeah, Wednesday is in the studio with Lennis at 7 p.m. Pacific time, and she has all the hot topics and whatever's happening in sports. I have no idea what her topic is for next week, but that's 7 p.m. Pacific time Wednesday. And that brings us back to Filmcology next Thursday.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Next Thursday we're going to do the best man and the best man holiday. So the best man came out, I don't know, about 10 years ago, something like that, and now the best man holiday just came out last year. And it's really not – they're nice films. There are – you know anything about – I think it's Carolyn Mice, isn't it? It talks about archetypes. There's some incredible archetypes in films. So
cool.
And it will be interesting if you do watch these films – to decide which character you find yourself to be more like. There's one character that specifically is more like me, and what's interesting, because some might say it would be the Taye Diggs character, who's the writer, but actually, I'm gonna let you guys figure out who that other character is. It'll be interesting to see which one you think is more me. I'll have to try to, you know, from a psychological point of view. But it's a fun, romantic comedy, and there's a lot about friends and secrets and how you deal with each other. It'll be really, and there's just some incredibly gorgeous people in this movie. So there's a lot of eye candy as you're looking at the psychology of things, and we'll talk about that. Try to check out the links. They're really interesting, and you can see some wonderful trailers on those films. Okay.
All right.
That's
thank
it,
you.
Folks. Have a great day. And again, thank you for the patience with the technical issues and everything else. Thank you for listening, folks. I really do appreciate your support. And thank you, Nina and Lydia and anyone else who might be in the chat room. I didn't see the chat room. I didn't chance trying to open that up. So whoever was out there listening, thank you. And I hope you do much better in life, and you seek help if you're needing it, and watch out for your children. It's best to err on not trusting. when it comes to children. Take care. Bye-bye, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.